Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. My name's Jimmy and I voted Leave in the referendum in 2016.
Hello, and my name's Jazza and I just want it all to be over. Please, just make it stop. I don't want to talk about Brexit anymore, despite the fact that we still have this podcast. I am convinced that Twitter is destroying my mental health, and I'm very close to muting the word on that bloody social media site. I voted to remain. I think everything's going great.
All right, we could call it a day then.
Great, cool. It's been fantastic. Thanks for 124 episodes. We meet sometimes to talk about politics, social issues, and current events. Not raisin events. I'm funny. We're joined this week by Nick Matsey.
Hello.
Who's a friend of the podcast and recent celebrity.
Well, yeah, my week of fame on...
How was that? Yeah, so do you want to tell the listener where they may have heard of you outside of the Right Dishonourable, obviously, which is where your main audience comes from?
Well, if everyone is a bit of a political nerd, then they may have seen the Sunday Politics in London a couple of weeks ago, which I was on, talking to Rashanara and Stephen Hammond from the Tories. Rashanara, who's the Bethnal Green MP, but her surname is skipped from my memory. And I was talking about why I quit the Tories, because I wrote a piece in the Times Red Box, which was their most read article ever.
That is genuinely very impressive.
It was so popular.
Well done.
It drove revenue.
For the Times.
Which,
bless him. Were you getting a cut from that?
No, because it was... I did take it up with Matt Chorley, who's the editor of Times Red Box, and he said, well, it was only 12 people, so when you do better next time, it's... I was like, okay. It's quite funny, because I said...
All 12 subscribers clicked on the link, that's very...
It actually was in the hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, I know.
So, Jazz...
No, you did. And I'm very impressed and proud of you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Well, it was a long decision. Sorry, it was a long-coming decision, I think. It was something I'd been... troubled with probably for about a year. I think you knew that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
there were rumours, well sourced rumours.
Yeah, sadly I'm not.
Yeah, the source was you, I think. Actually, so maybe deal with that leak. So we talk about three topics a week, and Nick is going to be joining us in one of them. In all of them.
Yeah.
Yes. You're just going to
it's a bit rubbish.
Sit here quietly for half an hour if you don't mind. So first off, we're going to be discussing Liam Neeson, who's not a racist. That's not what he sounds like. That was an Australian accent. Whoopsie.
They're very close. It's easy to mix up the two.
Generic non-English.
Yes. We also now know what a kosh is, because we didn't know before. We weren't sure if it was a racist term or not.
Yeah, I thought it was. I just assumed it was a racist term. It's a stick. Yeah. So Liam Neeson was doing some promo for a new movie that I can't remember.
Cold Pursuit?
Sure. So, it's another one where somebody...
It looks awful, doesn't it, as well?
I mean, he's in it, so...
It's another Liam Neeson movie where somebody gets... Stolen, kidnapped.
Taken.
Somebody gets, someone gets taken and then he finds them again, which seems to be the only
spoilers.
Thing.
Well, it's about revenge, isn't it? That's what it's about. It's about taking revenge, which is what the issue was.
He talked about a time 40 years ago, he was talking about his own experience with revenge, and when he found out that a friend of his was raped by a black man, and then he went around to black parts of town... trying to get in a fight so that he could unleash violence.
And he was holding a kosh at the time.
A kosh, which is not a racial term. It's a big stick.
A baton.
We looked it up.
Yes.
A baton, if a you baton. Want to be particularly posh. Liam Neeson has, perhaps rightly, been criticised for being a little bit racist.
40 years ago.
Yeah, 40 years ago, to be fair. But also, he's had some advocates... across different communities, they've said that actually he was quite brave to talk about this experience and admitting his own racism.
So brave. Hashtag so brave.
Oh, stop being so repressed about it. I think it is very brave. Poor man. But we three white men are going to be discussing whether or not Liam Neeson was racist.
Yes. As a white man,
yes,
I know everything.
Can you
about
speak
racism.
For all white men though?
I can. White straight men.
Thank you. Oh yes. I'll do the gays, and Jimmy, you can cut your hair. Jimmy, do you? What else are we going to be talking about? Even though this is my fault.
What's your fault?
Brexit.
Well, I think the Liam Neeson one is also your fault.
Yeah, no, all of the... Oh, yeah, all of the topics
are your fault this week.
Sorry.
So the second topic, we are going to be going back to Nigel Farage, who has just launched...
Another podcast. Yes, another white straight man.
T-straight, if anything. He's just launched a new party called the Brexit Party. Straight into the point this time. And he's going to be standing and fighting in the European elections, should Article 50 be extended.
Yeah, if it ends up going past the... if it gets extended, and if it ends up going past the European elections, which are in...
May or June?
I think it's June.
Is it June?
I think it's June or July, actually.
Oh.
It's one of those two. One of the J months... He is going to do a UKIP and field himself and others in those elections in order to really put their foot down about the fact that they want to leave the European Union. Thinking of joining that, Nick, as a new politically homeless?
Well, I mean, it's an option. It's an unlikely option, but it's an option, isn't it? I mean, it's nice to have choices.
Mm-hmm. Well, if not them, then maybe Renew.
Well, Renew did get in contact with me.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nothing special, Nick. They got in contact with me.
God, they are desperate.
Yep.
I thought Renew imploded. Because they're...
I'm still getting the email.
Con Coughlin, who is the founder, left. And there were various, like... loads of staff left as well. And,
Still getting the emails.
Okay. So,
well, all I'll say is they were very pleasant on Twitter when they contacted me.
Of course they are.
They all said nice things.
They're the most boring part of the Lib Dems in a party.
Wait, there's a more boring part of the Lib Dems?
Yeah. Well, Jimmy and I are the most interesting part of the Lib Dems. Objectively.
I'm not actually in the Lib Dems. So
no, but I'll take you to meetings again.
Okay, fine.
I look forward to a Leave member of the Lib Dems. That should be, you'll enjoy that.
There's one.
No, he didn't actually vote Leave, but he...
But he now believes in implementing
Leave. He handed back the whip because, he said we have to push this through,
Yeah.
Good on him.
Learned his name yet?
Stephen Lloyd.
Oh, well done. Excellent. And then finally, Nick, you'll love this. We're going to talk about you.
Absolutely.
Kind of segueing out of the foundation of a new party, whether what the future of party politics is going to look like in the UK. You seem to think that the Conservatives aren't going to last very long.
I think neither the Conservatives or Labour are going to last much longer.
Mm-hmm.
Which one's going to break first? I don't know. It's pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we were going to get Nick Bowles and Luciana Berger. We're both going to be... is Luciana... What's her surname?
Berger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we're going to see both of them deselected by their parties.
Mm-hmm.
But possibly just Nick Bowles now. So, we will see.
Very exciting. Right, we're going to play some music, beg you for money, and then get on with the podcast. Does that sound good?
Yeah, sounds fine.
Yeah? Sorry. Good.
So podcasts like this don't actually cost very much to make. We have a website that needs to be hosted and another hosting service for the podcast itself. We can afford to run this ourselves, but if you want to donate some money to show some appreciation and help keep the wolf from the door, as it were, you can do so by going to patreon.com/righteoushonourable. We'd like to thank our current patrons, David Warner, Emerson Spart, Gemma Cumming, Matt and Ollie McGregor. Thank you very much for supporting the podcast.
Liam Neeson is an actor who is quite popular. Like, he's got a whole franchise built.
This is going to be a long intro, isn't it?
No, not necessarily. But he sparked outrage, apparently, last week when he was doing a press junket for his most recent movie. What was it called, Jimmy?
Cold Pursuit,
a story about revenge, and he was asked by a journalist
whether or not... You just know it's going to be terrible, don't you? Just, like, the pictures of him, like, he's old, and just done Taken, and they were all terrible except for the first one, which I was weirdly surprised at how good it was. It's just going to be an awful film, isn't it?
I mean, the first Taken did suck, but in an enjoyable way.
Cool, so we're a movie review podcast now?
Well, I'm just jealous. You're launching this new movie review podcast, and he's getting on that territory.
Well, we did have... Anyway, stop getting sidetracked, please. So, he, when asked whether or not he had experienced like desires for revenge. He talked about a time 40 years ago, so it would have been the 70s, 80s?
Almost the 80s.
Yeah, like late 70s, early 80s, probably.
What year is this?
Where, I don't know. But where he found out about a friend who had been raped. He asked, apparently, a series of questions, one of which included what was the race of the guy, and he found out that it was a black guy who raped his friend. And then he wandered around black neighbourhoods waiting to be set upon so that he'd be able to unleash violence on any black person to get revenge. Is it understandable why people may have interpreted that as Liam Neeson being a little bit racist?
I mean, he was racist in that activity, but it was 40 years ago. So that's the context.
He
feels it was bad, his behaviour.
Does that pardon it?
Yeah, probably. It was 40 years ago. He feels bad about it. That's the definition of a pardonable offence.
Do you know, it's so complicated. Was it racist? Yes.
Yeah.
It was definitely racist. Because he was targeting random black people for hoping for a fight and wanting to kill that random black person. You know, I mean, that's what he wanted to do.
He partook in the exact definition of what racism is by holding a whole ethnic group responsible for something that one person from that ethnic group.
So it was racist, and therefore was it acceptable? Well, it doesn't matter. It was 100 years ago, frankly. The context of the time does not forgive past mistakes. Was he right to talk about it? I think it's really, and is it fair the treatment he's had afterwards? Well, he deserves to be punished for it, I believe. Actually,
punished.
Yeah, I do think
he never acted.
He didn't
on
do
it.
Anything.
No, he
really?
Didn't. But he did act on it. He went out looking for it. The only reason it didn't happen was because no person coming out of the pub was stupid enough to engage with him. He did act upon it, and if the situation had been different. I'm not saying that person would be innocent, but perhaps an accident in terms of miscommunication could have led to the death of someone who didn't deserve to be killed. But then
how do you... What do you think a punishment looks like for that kind of activity then? Because I think it's... Because otherwise we're partaking in, like, thought police.
Yes, I don't necessarily know how the answer to that.
Oh, okay.
I think it's extremely...
How disappointing.
But he did commit a crime, so...
Did he...
Well, he didn't commit a crime, did he? He walked around with a cosh. Is that illegal?
It was also... we also don't know where it took place, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think it was in the United States.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I never picked that up from the...
Well, I'm assuming so, because there aren't black neighbourhoods in Northern Ireland where he grew up.
I did think that, yeah. But
if he was in Northern Ireland... I don't think it was Northern Ireland. Having lived there.
To be fair, you do know the place.
And in the 70s and 80s, there were none.
Mm-hmm.
Really, unless they were British soldiers. Mm-hmm. So, I doubt it was Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of Twitter outrage. Not necessarily... because
there's always Twitter outrage.
There's always Twitter outrage. but if Twitter outrage didn't exist, what would we talk about here? He talked about... So there was a lot of pushback saying, like, oh, holy shit, this isn't just subtle, kind of underhanded racism and thought. This is, like, he intended on actually, like, hurting him and maybe killing a black person. There were some people who came to his defence, though. So specifically the one that's gotten a lot of attention is John Barnes, is a black British footballer, who I think he went to the other extreme of that Liam Neeson deserved a medal for admitting that he was racist. But then I think projected a load of kind of nuance onto the story, being like, oh, he admitted being part of this racist culture and everybody should admit to being part of this racist culture. And I'm not sure that's what Liam Neeson was necessarily doing. I think that you could perhaps interpret it like that, but I don't think from previous interviews that Liam Neeson has had that he perhaps understands the nuances of, like, the race relations that his thoughts and his the ordeal that he went through, like, how that is representative of wider society.
It wasn't really a race relations story, although that obviously has been one of the focuses. It was a revenge story from his point of view. He was responding to a question about revenge and why, because the film is about revenge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how he presumably intended it to be taken, as this is a story of revenge, and he was trying to use it to illustrate that revenge doesn't pay, or whatever the phrase would be.
Yeah.
It hasn't turned out
so way. Something that was quite you mocked me for saying that he was brave, but there's something that I think was quite brave was that he talked about getting help after he kind of like caught himself doing these things, going out and trying to look for trouble. So he said that he did it like about 4 times, perhaps, and then kind of realised what he was doing. Spoke to people and spoke to professionals to kind of like help it and power walking.
Well, this is why it's such a, this is why it's such a complicated issue. You know, he recognised he did a racist thing and possibly an illegal thing. He recognised that he did a racist thing and a very stupid thing, and he admitted it 40 years later. Fine, okay, and then. You know, that
well, he admitted it publicly 40 years later. Presumably, if he sought help at the time, he had to admit it at the time to the people he was seeking help from.
Yeah, but I mean, if we knew about this beforehand, would he have gone and become an actor? I mean...
Yeah, but in the 80s, probably.
Yeah, probably.
It also hasn't hurt Mel Gibson. If we didn't know who he was. So, it's only newsworthy now that he has the profile.
But then let's look at the other actors that have been... prevented from continuing their career, not from even things that they've admitted or been found guilty for, but simply been accused of.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey is a great example. He actually hasn't been found guilty. He has not admitted anything, and yet his career has been completely
ruined. There's so many reports, though.
Yeah, but there's so many accusations of him that I'm not
making excuses for the man.
And you would understand why somebody who had a public profile like that probably wouldn't be able to work very well while... people figured out whether or not he had been.
Hey, well, look, if you worked anywhere else, if you worked in Tesco, or if you worked in, you know, online or digital media, or whatever, you know, your job is your job until you're proven guilty and it conflicts through. I think it's unfair to do that. But in this case, he has gone and admitted. Well, that's because the world is judgmental and the Twitter goes crazy.
No, but I also think that it's a part of the job as well. Yeah. Like the job of being an actor.
It's a business thing.
Yeah, it's not necessarily. I don't think responsibility is perhaps the right word, but because you are undoubtedly linked to whatever kind of like role you portray, you are going to, and you're going to have to do press for it. Your behaviour is going to be implicated in it, and accusations around your behaviour are going to be public. It's just part of being in the public.
No, I don't deny that, but none of them, you know, we got a case of one actor there who has admitted to doing something with racism and everyone's trying to forgive it. Mm-hmm. I think that's not right. And you've got another actor who has not been found guilty of anything, and it's been completely wiped out in movie futures and past. He's taken it removed from a part in a film that was just about to be released. I think there's some severe double standards.
I think if there are multiple credible accusations against someone that they've committed sexual assault at different occasions, it's fair to conclude they have committed sexual assault. I don't think that's a giant.
That's not how the law works.
Liam Neeson's just losing
his business.
But also, I think that the link between Liam Neeson and somebody like Kevin Spacey is probably like it's just the only similarity is scandal involving established actor. Liam Neeson is just talking about something that happened like in his past, but I think that it depends on how he deals with the backlash that he got. I think it was probably right for us to be able to have this conversation about kind of he called it like a primal. Feeling that he had to go out and kind of like enact some kind of violence on somebody to get some kind of revenge. And what I think is missing from kind of like the nuance, he did a follow-up email where he kind of explained his points with Good Morning America with the anchor Robin Roberts. And he talked about, like I said, this primal urge. But the thing is, there is a primal urge to kind of to other humans and to think about humanity and society and different groups and those who are out-group and in-group and all of those kinds of things that sociology talks about. But racism is learned. Like, when you take kids who have not been exposed to those kinds of ideals, racism doesn't exist until you expose them to wider racist society.
And but I didn't racism, feel... That's a postmodernism interpretation,
yeah.
Jazz, I think. I don't think that's entirely true.
We are we not postmodern?
Some of us clearly are. I don't believe in the postmodernist interpretation of everything about our biology is simply down to society.
I don't. To be fair, Jazza hasn't just said that. He's just said that we do have. I mean, you believe we have instinctive tribal.
We have instinctive tribal tendencies to other people, but the othering of people based on race is something that is learned. So that primal instinct manifests in racism, because racism, the difference that we have because of race. Is a societal thing that has been learned.
So that primal instinct, of course, exists. We've always, you look at chimpanzees, they still beat each other up, but not based on the colour of the pigmentation of their skin.
Why? Well, you know? Quite specifically, that's why they will do and be concerned about other people. We know that those chimpanzees and other apes, if they have scars on them or other issues or disfigurements, actually, they do react to them quite negatively, and especially they don't know them. So I don't believe that. I think that's still a postmodernist perspective of where racism comes from. Not that I think this would be a debate to get into that, right? But I think there are aspects of learned society and some of the genetic that come through. Either way, what Liam Neeson has done, if anything, society now should teach us that racism is wrong, regardless of how you might feel.
Oh, that's nice that we've decided that.
Well,
it's taken us a while, though, isn't it?
Whatever the reasons for it, whether it's learned or not learned, we are a society where we are able to learn that racism is not the right thing and is a bad thing and should be punished when it comes up. He's admitted to it.
What would the punishment be for him in this instance?
Would it perhaps be him maybe not being able to work until things were clarified for a while? Would that be a sufficient punishment?
I don't believe in the judge and jury of Twitter and the public. I think,
maybe the market can decide what his punishment is by not giving him work.
But this isn't a criminal matter, so you can't refer it to the courts.
We don't know.
There's nothing to refer to the courts.
No, but I do understand the desire for there to be some kind of like rectification. That's not a word.
Should there be a panel on public racism or something where, you know, a panel of experts can judge when someone's been racist in public but hasn't committed a hate crime when they're allowed to re-enter society?
I would say it's still a hate crime. I don't know if hate crime
I don't think it is a hate crime. There's no crime committed.
Well, yeah.
You can't police people's intent to commit a crime.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, you can.
Intent to commit grievous bodily harm is a crime.
Would it have been in the US at the time, though?
He wanted to kill them.
Mm.
So I'm pretty sure. Maybe everyone at home listening can Google this while we're debating it. But I'm pretty sure.
And please do let us know on Twitter. Let Nick know on Twitter.
Yeah, please do.
I mean, walking around with an open weapon, a weapon that is openly displayed in the US, is not necessarily a crime, depending on what state you're in.
It's encouraged, I think, most of the time, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So, I think that's going into like the technicality of it, but you're right in correcting me that we actually do... yeah, okay, yeah, I said you were right.
This, listeners, is a very rare experience of Jazza to me. He's wrong to me, so I'm going to have it.
I didn't say I was wrong. I said you were right.
That's fine. I'm happy to confirm you were wrong.
What is that called? A mealy-mouth reply, I think, is the term.
Yeah, you're welcome. But the fact that actually we do convict people who have done thought crimes. Like, well, I'm thinking specifically of like terrorism and stuff like that. If somebody Googles specific things and has taken steps to commit that kind of an atrocity, then yeah.
But that's usually in the form of like planning and like effort going into something. It's not usually in the form of being so angry that you could kill someone or think you could kill someone.
But he took effort. He got a kosh. And he went up
you
and down four or five.
Too,
I love it now. Four or five times, looking for, in his words, some black bastard to kill. That's what he said.
He does put quotes around "black bastard" as well, which kind
is what he. I mean, he said that. That's his.
Yes, point. Yeah. But they can't see quotation marks on a podcast. I'm just giving context.
So, are you saying that they should go? I mean, there's a whole statute of limitations question as well. But should they go back and investigate whether he might have committed a crime?
I guess it depends if it's of it serves the public interest. Is the way the law?
I don't think it serves the public interest to go back 40 years to a crime like this. If it was a different crime, maybe. But
I probably agree with you on that. Yeah, I agree with you on that.
So in the interview that he did with Robin Roberts, he told her that or claimed, and I think he does believe this, that he would have done the same. If his friend had described the person as an Irishman or a Scot or a Brit, he would have gone after
Lithuania was one of the examples.
Yeah. Do you buy that bullshit?
No.
It was a race thing, right?
You can't tell if someone's Lithuanian just by looking at them.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the major problems.
I'm also unconvinced that he would have just walked around Ireland. found any of them to, like, be...
Are you white? Yes.
And there's also kind of like this, he says at the end, "I'm not racist." And I'm like... No, but you are. But you are. but then also, you have been. We've all grown up in a racist society, And it isn't necessarily your fault that you had those instincts, but it's how you react to them that is the important thing. But he doesn't seem to realise that he was racist. He is doing what so many kind of like racist people do, separating themselves from racism, saying that a thing is racist but never admitting themselves that they are racist.
I think that's what annoys people probably the most as well, isn't it?
Is what he's saying, I'm not racist now, or is he saying, I wasn't racist then?
I think I got the implication that it was like a both. It was like an umbrella for both current Neeson and
yeah,
past
I wasn't
Neeson.
Doing it because I was a racist person. It just happened to be a black person. I just don't believe that, because I don't believe someone would... If the person said, what race were they, and they said white, would he have gone walking up and down the street looking for a white, some white bastard to hit with a kosh? I just don't believe it. Yeah. Where do you get kosh from, anyway?
He obviously
don't
just
Google it, because otherwise you'll be arrested for planning a hate crime. Speaking of hate crimes, Brexit's continuing.
Good segue.
Yeah, thank you. It's a hate crime specifically against me and those little letters at the top of my passport that say European Union.
That was what I voted Leave, just to get
at you. Just to get there. Yeah,
just to get at you personally, Jazza.
I know, Jimmy, and I'm glad that you've finally admitted it. So,
of course, I don't know if I'm the only person in the room with an Irish passport, so just putting it out there. If I, you know, just letting you all know, Jazza, that I have an Irish passport.
Is that,
I actually have a little credit card.
Is that relevant
as well.
To the discussion?
It's just winding Jazza up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hate it. Lena, friend of the podcast, has an Irish passport and has never been to Ireland.
That should disqualify you, really.
It should,
like,
really.
When
shouldn't
you're applying,
it?
It's like, have you been here before? Even once?
At least I have lived in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
That's not the bit of Ireland you got the passport for, arguably.
No, you get it for the whole. That passport applies to the whole of Ireland.
If you're born in Northern Ireland, according to the Good Friday Agreement, you have the right to choose to be British or Irish or both.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah, but is the Good Friday Agreement going to continue to be relevant? We don't know. Oh, it's such an exciting time to be alive. There have been a few amendments.
He's not taking it well.
There have been a few amendments to May's Brexit bill that have been floated, most rejected, one specific one passed in the past couple of weeks. Yvette Cooper, who... in another universe, is currently running the Labour Party, but obviously
probably the country.
Probably the country. She tried to put through an amendment that would rule out the UK leaving the EU without a formal deal by allowing Parliament time to pass a new law, and it would have required Theresa May to seek to postpone Brexit until the end of the year if MPs didn't approve her deal per the 26th. Of February, which is fast approaching. This fell by only about, I think it was just over 10 votes it fell by. And then there were a number of other amendments that did similar things, but the Cooper one was kind of the one that was being pushed by the official Labour whip, and it only just fell. The one that passed that everybody is talking about is the Brady Amendment, which... was one of the wishy-washy ones, Nick is holding his head, that asked for clarification on the backstop. So that won by 317 votes to 301. Why do we think that Cooper's fell and Brady's passed?
Do you know what? The first thing I'm going to say is I'm so sick of the flipping amendments. Like, they make me want to stab myself in the eyeball. These amendments that... clearly demonstrated.
There have been, I've only given
I know, and there was
two
so
here, but there were so many, and so many that overlapped, and they all ended up falling or passing by pretty like very small
I mean, in answer to your question, it's a demonstration that nobody in Parliament, there's no single grouping, has a majority for any specific type of Brexit. There's lots of different groups. Everyone's got a different vision of what Brexit is, all down to the stupid question of the referendum, and all these amendments are not having any material impact or difference on what it's going on Theresa May's deal. So the current one is, go back and renegotiate on the backstop according to the deal you've already got, when you've already been told you're not going to get a change.
And then within 7 minutes, the EU...
which we knew.
...released a statement that was like, yeah, the deal isn't going to change, just FYI.
So I was...
it took them 7 minutes.
I was in Parliament... the week before, talking to a Tory MP, who's a very good Tory MP, and I did say
which one?
Damien Collins.
Oh.
Who I like a lot. He's a good guy. Does all the DCMS committee stuff, all the fake news reports, which you must read if anyone hasn't. They're very good. And
bit of bedtime reading.
I won't. Obviously, it was you know, conversation between him and I. But the sense of frustration amongst Conservative MPs and other MPs about the amendments on deals that they already knew was going to be a no seems to be just, they're just completely fed up with it.
Why do you think something like the Brady? Because the Brady Amendment means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. It was just kind of like another way of kicking the can down the road. And it gave Theresa May a mandate to go back and renegotiate the backstop, quote-unquote.
It creates some unity.
But then she didn't want to go to the European Union. And I know that we can use Skype, but I feel like that's not what she was doing. We've talked about this in the past, Jimmy, about the fact that she's just running down the clock.
Yeah.
Are you, as a representative of the 52%...
and therefore speaking for all the voters.
He does, true, regularly, yeah, on this true. Podcast. He is our spokesperson. Are you happy with that tactic? You seemed not as annoyed as I want you to be about it in the past.
I don't see what the alternatives are.
Mm-hmm. So just run the clock down and pretend that they're doing parliamentary shit.
Yeah, well, funny, you know, there's a lot of parliamentarians that want to, as you know, Nick said, there's not a majority for any given thing, so a lot of them are just jostling for position with these amendments and trying to use it to improve their own situation, whether they want to overturn the referendum result or create a soft Brexit or create a hard Brexit or whatever. That's all these amendments are. It's just a procedural monkey business, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So, and from Theresa May's point of view, notwithstanding the major blunders that she's made previously, given the situation she's in, I don't really see what other option she has but to run down the clock and push her own deal through.
Mm-hmm.
On the basis that actually...
just pretend that she's being able to go back and renegotiate the backstop. Now, she might get a wording change, although even that has been made... has been pretty much ruled out by Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach of Ireland. And so it's all just kind of like posturing and headlines to waste paper.
Well, having had the Brady Amendment pass, could she really have said, okay, thanks for doing that, I'm not going to go back and do anything because the deal is what the deal is?
Mm-hmm.
Can she even legally do that, given that, you know, the idea that Parliament is sovereign?
But then also, what does doing that look like? Clearly doesn't look like going to Brussels.
Yeah.
Or Strasbourg, depending on the week.
I mean, a lot of the amendments seem kind of incoherent, like there were various proposals to rule out no deal, and I think, you know, some Labour MPs are still jostling for that. You can't rule out no deal without passing more legislation. No deal is the default option.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just pass a motion saying rule out no deal in Parliament. That doesn't legally make
sense. But that's what the Cooper Amendment did. It tried to reduce, at least significantly reduce, the chance of no deal by increasing the amount of time, asking for an extension to Article 50 to the end of the year. And the extension requested was to it was until December 31st, yeah, I believe. But she was actually gunning for a negotiation there. Funnily enough, somebody who knows how to negotiate. Fun. And it being just before the European elections. Yeah, so that we...
That actually proves my point, because Parliament can't actually rule out a no deal. If you go back to... If the British government goes back to the EU27 and asks for an extension, the extension is contingent on their permission.
Mm-hmm.
So Parliament can't do anything in and of itself now. You still have to ask for those things.
And, yeah, so there's that's a major challenge, actually, that no one really talks about with an extension, because one nation in the EU27 can say, no, you're not, we're fed up with you,
yeah,
that's it. With a withdrawal of Article 50, we can do that unilaterally. So
yes,
we just need to go, yeah, we're going to now. Also, because...
But then I don't think that obviously, I want to stay in the EU more than anything. I think that the only legitimate way out is to put it into some kind of, like, democratic vote again. I think to overturn a referendum, you have to have another referendum.
I think we're in an extreme...
But I've made those views very clear.
The only way you can deal with create a second referendum, in my view...
Is think about it really hard and tap your feet three times.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Is you have to address the issues of the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And okay, all the vote leave. Right? You have to accept that both sides cheated a little bit. All right? Certainly not an equal measure.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's true. Remainers did cheat a lot more.
Yes, I think it was a single Lib Dem fine.
I will hit you.
A single Lib Dem fine, I think, was the issue. But fine, all right, there's a
The problem wasn't really the Remain campaign, it was more David Cameron's government who was trying to fix the referendum in his favour, which is what governments do when they organise referendums.
But there's a difference between what was legal and illegal. Let's so focus on the illegal elements of the folk.
It
Leave
doesn't matter
campaign.
That Leave overspent because Remain overspent
children,
more.
It doesn't matter.
We've done this before.
It doesn't make a difference.
The point being, if you don't address the fact what was a fraudulent and illegal referendum,
mm-hmm.
you cannot then go and just have a second one just because you're in a bit of a rut. So you have to address that first one.
Yeah, I think that let's not go into this again, but I've talked about the fact that I think that there is a way of being able to frame a second referendum as a clarification referendum where rather than talking about concepts and broad directions as to where a country is going, you end up voting on like an actual concrete, this is a
but
deal,
I don't believe
a
you
no
could
deal,
have
or just stay.
Just stay as an option in that. Because what you're doing is they're going, you're trying to figure out a way of getting out of it.
Yeah, but I think that it has to be on there. Because you should be able to change your mind.
Deal or no deal is a lot more coherent as a second referendum thing for the reason Nick just said.
Yeah, but I really want to stay in the EU, Jimmy.
As do I, Jazza, mm-hmm. right? As do I. But I really struggle with that definition on there because we are told the Vote Leave campaign, sorry, the Leave on Leave, you will leave. So the clarification referendum needs to be, what kind of leave did you really want?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a way around it.
And then no deal wins. By every poll.
No, you'd have a customs union single market.
So you'd put another, but that's not an option.
Why not?
There is because the EU have made it very clear that Theresa May's deal is the only deal.
No, according to her, with her red lines.
What?
With Theresa May's red lines mm-hmm. in place, which is mm-hmm. no single market, no customs union, ECJ not ruling over the UK, things like that, no hard border in Ireland. If we as a referendum decided to say, well, actually, we do want single market and customs union in the UK, then Theresa May's red lines are overwritten by the mandate of a British population-led referendum.
I'm not sure if that necessarily works. But also, it's not going to happen.
That is Theresa May's red lines she creates herself that causes us to have the current deal.
Mm. Yeah, Nick's right. If Theresa May hadn't set out those red lines on immigration,
we need to stop saying he's right. His head's going
to explode. Right, no, he is right. If Theresa May's negotiating priorities have led to this deal, but other deals would be available if she had different negotiating priorities. But at this point, we don't really have time to negotiate any other deals. So if you're going to have a referendum, it would probably have to be deal or no deal.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And there's already a TV show about that.
There is.
By the way, Jazza, I don't think we're going to leave. I still
really?
Don't. I can't believe next month they've just no. It's just not going to happen. It's just there's just so much stuff not in place. It would be catastrophic.
Yeah, I know.
So I can't.
So that which is why I genuinely have stockpiled toilet paper.
Those are your priorities. It's like
toilet paper, baked beans. They're going to be the first things to go off the shelves.
So everyone now knows when the crisis hits, come to Jazza's.
Come to Jazza's.
I mean,
have loads of recycled toilet paper.
If you're worried about running out of toilet paper, you don't want to be eating baked beans.
We don't make all of our any toilet paper here.
Oh God, we're stuck.
So those that we do manufacture here, the wood is imported
from Sweden or
from Sweden. Yeah,
yeah.
We're buggered. Anyway, Nick, you poor little baby.
I know
you're politically homeless.
I know.
Can you? So you've not been a lifetime. Can you tell us a little bit about like your journey from? Like growing up in the southwest and being a liberal voter, because you haven't always been a conservative.
No, I haven't. I've transitioned through the various don't giggle. I transitioned through the various parties at some point or another. I started as a Lib Dem voter because Paddy Ashdown was a local MP, and so therefore, in growing up in Somerset with Paddy Ashdown, how could you not be a Lib Dem voter?
Legend.
And then, of course, Tony Blair came along, and I discovered I was a bit more centrist and sort of voted for him once, and then I discovered I was really a Tory, and then I voted Tory. I can't remember.
What was the first election you voted in? General?
I must have been 2001.
Okay, so you voted Paddy 2001.
Then Labour.
Then, so
2007?
Tony, 2005.
2005, yeah.
And then from all Tory, 2010.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And when are you going to vote green?
probably the next election, I guess.
Yeah, fun times.
At this rate, yeah. So
who did you vote for in the last two elections, 2015 and 17?
Conservative led times.
Led times, okay.
I didn't enjoy it.
Well, nobody enjoyed
it. 2015 I did. 2015, it was peak Tory Nick.
Yeah,
right? And I was like, I know, and you love me still. I knocked on doors, and I had people who shouted the Tories because we were enabling gay marriage. And I said, I'm proud to be enabling gay marriage. I know it was a Lib Dem policy, and the Tories took all the, and most of the MPs didn't vote for it.
Yeah.
But David Cameron did, and I did, and most of the people I was canvassing did believe in gay marriage, and we're very proud to do it. And I didn't mind we lost voters to UKIP because of gay marriage. I feel very strong about it.
Thank you, I guess, for riding on Lynn Featherston's coattails.
Oh, well, whoever's, it was a great idea. Great. I'm pleased about it.
I'm glad you are happy
like
that I
have campaigning for the
story. Yes, yeah,
cool. Are you sure you have left?
Jesus.
Well, 2015, it was an important thing. 2017 was hard. Right. 2017, I was out knocking on doors, and I was doing so for my friends. I didn't do much canvassing at all for 2017. I also didn't canvass for the mayor elections in 2016.
Yes.
Because I didn't like the dog was politics, racism.
That was Zach Goldsmith.
Yeah, that was
really who did he vote for in the end?
No one.
No one.
Didn't vote.
You abstained?
Yeah.
Consciously abstained?
No, I just didn't post anything.
Yeah. You
should have warned your ballot, really, though, shouldn't you? That's a more active thing to do.
Maybe. It's difficult, isn't it? But 2017 was hard because I remember a particular moment, and I was canvassing for my friend Paul Holmes, who I absolutely adore, and he was running in Plymouth, and I was stood there having a picture taken with all of us going, "Theresa, support Theresa May's Brexit."
Oh yeah, I remember.
And I absolutely despised myself holding it. I hated it, and I was only there for Paul, and I would still canvass for Paul because I believe in him, but knocking on doors saying vote for Theresa May's Brexit made me just awful, and that was when that's when the chain started of me going, well, I can't see this continuing. And as the mad process gone on, I remember one day when they said that EU nationals would have to register and pay. Now they got rid of the pay, fine, but they still have to apply for the right to remain. I said, that's it, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I'm not standing for this. Mm-hmm. And then that was the breaking point.
Because obviously you have a lot of Conservative Party friends.
Mm.
How have they kind of reacted to you being a turncoat? Or not really a turncoat, you've just taken your coat off.
A deserter.
A deserter.
When I told everyone on my Facebook first, because I didn't want them to be shocked by the Times piece.
Very kind.
And they were all very kind.
I often have that problem, to be honest.
They were very kind and supportive, and it was very sad. It was very, very upsetting. It wasn't a nice thing to do, because it becomes, when you're quite political, it becomes quite a core part of who you are. Mm-hmm. You spend loads of time with them. Then the Times piece came out, and the headline was edited slightly to be quite strong.
Of course, it gets clicks.
And it upset a few people.
What was the headline to the piece?
Tories are liars and frauds.
It must have been harder than that, right?
Something like that. Yeah. So I think it was all Tories are liars. It's a party of liars and frauds. It's the party led by liars and frauds, I think, and a ethos and culture and a vision is based on lies and fraud, I think, is more appropriate, but you can't write that in a Times article headline.
You could, but that's not what news does anymore.
So a few people said I was doing it for self-promotion, but many friends actually reached out and were like, actually, I do agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
But they have chosen to stay and fight the good fight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to convince them otherwise, because many of them are just saying, well, Jeremy Corbyn's worse. And I'm like, yeah, but both options are bad.
Mm-hmm.
Can't we fight for a good option?
Mm-hmm. And what does that good option look like?
Well, good option for me is, first of all, not a party that's obsessed with Jewish people or Muslims, first of all.
Jesus.
Right?
Yeah, fair.
Because Labour is anti-Semitic and is led by a racist.
Mm-hmm.
And the Conservatives have... Theresa May is not at all. But party membership, the grassroots of Tories are obsessed with immigrants and Muslims. 80% of
them. And she's very happy to pander to it.
She does pander to it, and the whole hostile environment thing is very damaging. So it's something better, first of all.
Despite the fact that hostile environment was instigated by Gordon Brown.
Was it?
It's a Labour policy. The concept of hostile environment, but then it got properly hostile, I think.
Yeah, like driving vans around with your hair illegal.
Yeah, I think that's maybe not the peak, but that's when it kind of peaked above, kind of like
the other thing as well. I think of more honest and direct politics. So, we're all fed up of politicians who just can't answer a flipping question. Like, where I've seen politicians ask Jeremy Corbyn 6 times, what's your real view on Brexit? And they have to keep asking the same time, and he can't just say his personal view. And then Theresa May, she says, let me be clear. And it's like, I don't know how many times, 150 times she said it, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Nothing's changed.
And it's just, stop lying.
That's not a new phenomenon, though.
No, it's not. But I think it's even worse now, because people are used to clickbait media and,
What was the name of the Conservative MP who claimed that the UK didn't get any money from the Marshall Plan? And then anyone Googled and found out
Daniel,
whereas actually we got the most from the Marshall Plan,
not loans either.
Then he was corrected in several places, but then continued to say it.
Yeah.
And that kind of Trumpist post-truthy.
Yeah. Then you got Marc Francois ripping up stuff. A letter from chief exec of Airbus. Then you've got Sir Chris Chope, who has blocked legislation on upskirting female genital mutilation, mm-hmm. and number of other issues. Now, if people want to be in a party with these people, they can knock themselves out. But certainly not something I'm going to do.
But these people were in this party for longer than
they
were.
They were on the extremes. They were on the sides, and they.
But you always knew they were there, and there's always been a huge Brexit contingent. They are the majority of the members.
I used to be able to pretend that they weren't there, and I wasn't really associating with them. And this was a journey through to make something better. And mm-hmm. I have realised that was wrong.
It sounds as though you're just upset that your wing of the party has lost control, and the other wing has found it.
Awesome. Well, that's certainly part of it. I mean, if the more liberal wing had remained in control, then I wouldn't be worried about having to leave and find another party. But now these extreme elements. Trust me, if I was more important in the party, like an MP or something else like that, I would want to be getting them out. So I can tell you the words of Dr. Philip Lee, right? When I did talk to him about some of this stuff, and he said to me, for a long time, we put up with these racists because they were good canvassers and door knockers. We knew that, he's a bit racist, but he's really good at leafleting sort of stuff. We have accepted these lunatics in our party, as has the Labour Party, as has the Lib Dems, who had a leader who did not believe in gay marriage. We have all put up...
But who always voted for gay marriage. Who always defended LGBT rights.
So you're referring to Tim Farron, aren't
you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. You can defend that one yourself.
He did vote for gay marriage.
And that's
Jazza doesn't need to defend that.
He didn't believe in it inside, and he openly says, I don't particularly believe in it. It's in conflict with my Christian values.
He didn't say that he didn't believe in gay marriage. He said that he believed that gay sex was a sin. But then also answered it in a way that was as a Catholic, we're all sinners. He was trying to answer something philosophically. But it was not anti-LGBT. Otherwise, I would not have continued to be a member of the Lib Dems.
Fine, you justify that the way you choose to justify that. I don't think again it's something I would accept.
This is a bit rich. Your party is way more homophobic.
It's not my party. I have left them.
Your ex-party was much more homophobic.
I agree. But I'm not. I left them because I don't believe in that anymore.
So what's next?
It's not fair to throw that. At me.
Sparring never hurt anybody. A lot of the media that you went through last week was about you were framed as politically homeless. Mm-hmm. So you've got your shell on your back. Where are you heading?
So
why aren't you going to the Lib Dems? As I've told you for years.
I don't believe the Lib Dem. So Paddy Ashdown was a liberal with grit. Mm-hmm. You don't have liberalism with grit anymore.
Then why don't you go in there and give it some grit?
I don't have an answer.
What is liberalism with grit? What
guys,
I
think I just planted a seed.
Well, liberalism with grit is going... So at the moment, the Lib Dems are probably... I wouldn't call them a centrist party. I'd say they're on the... They're
left-leaning. They've moved into that space that Labour used to occupy to a certain extent, right?
Well, I mean, I would say under Blair, they were probably... Labour was a little bit tiny centre-right, but with some left-wing policies. But
the Overton window changes where the middle is all the time.
Yes. They have to be able to go out and fight their cause and share their vision and have some strength behind it with some leaders and people that can really fight the cause with passion. And I don't see that coming from the Lib Dems.
Mm-hmm. But that's because they just have a really small pool at the moment of public national figures.
Yeah, I have met a couple. In fact, no, I actually haven't done because we couldn't get any MPs in because we had Laurie Burt came and talked to them. That some of my colleagues at an event to try and get more women into politics. I couldn't get any Lib Dem MPs mm-hmm. to turn up, but there was only a couple of them, so that's a fair one.
I think there's literally two.
So some things that the Lib Dems could do to show a bit more grit determination would be to have a more clear policy on defence and international relations and promise to put more money into defence and show that they are a party of...
This sounds like you want them to be a bit more right-wing,
so,
by the sounds of things.
But also what it sounds like to me is that you've decided to divorce yourself from the Conservatives and Labour from like really strong, important issues like racism and our membership of the European Union and the way that they conduct themselves. And you found... Defence is the reason that you're not going to vote for the Lib Dems.
Example.
It feels a little petty.
One example.
Give
there.
Me a better one.
Plus, if you join the Lib Dems, they would move very more slightly in that direction.
I'll be sure.
Not many of us.
Yeah. The lack of interest I have in the Lib Dems stems from the very poor leadership they've demonstrated over the last few years with Grandpa Vince on there who doesn't seem to be doing anything.
Lib Dems don't seem that much worse than the other two.
I think they're objectively better. Yeah, they're just not particularly good at their jobs.
There's nothing about them that inspires me.
Then maybe you could inspire them.
Okay, but
episode is now a recruitment drive.
Okay, so what are you going to do that you don't like the Lib Dems?
My intent at the moment is I'm going to run as an independent.
Oh.
Okay.
There are forces at work for the creation of a new party, as we read about in the newspapers mm-hmm. every single day. Mm-hmm. I think it would be extremely useful if there was a core set of MPs that came over to create that, so there was that movement in Parliament straight away. Mm-hmm. 35 is the number, because then, of course, you're the third biggest party over the SNP, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yes.
And therefore, you get questions. So that's a Prime Minister's question, so you have that focus and attention. And that will bring a lot of people, and I think there's a lot of people out there, and I'm sure the Lib Dems would merge with that as well, and you would have a broad coalition of the centre.
I wouldn't be so sure about that.
Yeah, but in our current voting system, third parties do terribly. Without local concerns, there is no way of being able
You bring those MPs over, you can usually get them re-elected at the next election. They struggle with the ones afterwards. We've seen that with the two UKIP guys, two Tories that came over to UKIP. One got re-elected, mm-hmm. the other one didn't.
Yeah, and the SDP are doing... Oh, wait.
The SDP came over four MPs and took something like 23% of the national vote within 2 years. That's with just four MPs.
Yeah, but because of the voting...
first past the post is a challenge. All right, fair one. But it's not a reason not to try to do something. If you have a powerful message, you'll be able to do it.
I think that first past the post protects the two parties as they are in a way that a third party... Meaning that a third party just cannot break
through. Look,
the only way that we have ever had significant third parties in this country is through strong regional constituencies. Be it the SNP in Scotland or Lib Dems, who are known to be really strong on local issues and created Lib Dem constituencies on a local level, not on a national level.
You're basing this on the fact of a small breakaway group, when actually what you've got is the potential for a massive split between the two big parties. Mm-hmm. And just because it benefits the Tories and the Labour at the moment, if you have two massive splits between them and a merger together of a third organisation, you could see civil change. And don't forget, you had the Liberals wiped out by Labour years ago. You had S&P come from nowhere from 20 years. These things might not happen.
Because they're a regional party.
Yeah, fine, but you can do one in England. I'm just saying, you're just throwing all these reasons not to do it, right?
I think that it is a waste of time. I think that founding a party now is a waste of time. I would love for us to have more options as an electorate, but that doesn't happen until we have some kind of electoral reform, because whereas we love talking about this and the idea of the political centre, the vast majority of people who vote will vote for one or the other, and those that are important and important constituencies will not be following the foundation of a new party and pining for the political homeless. It's a waste of time.
We have seen...
And we need to double down on either...
Parties come through so many times that in the last 100, 150 years where actually that demonstrates that it can change. It just needs a point of time where societal change has happened and people now focus more on cultural rather than the class-based voting. If there's any time for an opportunity for a new party to have a really impact, big impact, it's now.
I mean, the last time a big party emerged as and became one of the front runners, it's because they enfranchised all the working class people in the 1920s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen.
No, again. I agree with you. It has to be done differently. But we have new tools and systems that can help reach out. Where did UKIP come from? UKIP reached 4 million voters in the 2015.
And again, I think they galvanised the class.
Yeah, they did. But they still reached it.
Yeah, they galvanised the class and then only got elected members from... People coming from the Tories, or on proportionate representation in the European Parliament.
I'm not saying it's not a challenge.
We're saying the fundamentals go against you. You're swimming upriver on
this one.
Listen,
guys, you just give me a call when you're ready to come over. Jazza first, obviously. You probably want to, you know, the whole Brexit thing, maybe not so keen. But
oh, no, he's lovely. He's an interesting voice.
But it'll be a wonderful place. And we'll have a great time.
Well
good luck, I guess.
Yeah, enjoy it.
Well, look, even if it just manages to convince people that there's something to be passionate about there and there's a chance for change... is better than at the moment if people just sit around going, oh, I wish there was something better. And the other answer is that people say, well, you know, a lot of my friends said you've got to be in Tories or in Labour, you know, you can't leave them.
Yeah, you've seen, have you read Nick Clegg's book, How to Stop Brexit?
Believe it or not, Jazza, I have not read.
I have a copy.
The head of corporate affairs for Facebook's.
he is gold.
Of course he is. He's certainly made of gold now.
Goals.
Mm-hmm.
He suggests not even joining the Liberal Democrats. He suggests if we want to make any change, you join and you become overtly active in either one of the two parties.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's how you actually change politics here, because then you can do stuff like change electoral systems, or you can shift the centre of gravity in that party. Mm. Look at momentum. That's how you change a party. That's how you change the politics of a country. Mm. Unfortunately, in a country that has a first-past-the-post system.
I think momentum is probably the reason Labour's going to be sunk. But
they're on 40% at the moment.
Depending on the
party. Oh, you're actually Diane. Which quite far behind.
Which poll are you reading from 2 weeks ago?
It is about 40%.
It's about 34%.
Yeah, they have
all of the
about
time. It's
40%.
About 40%. Both the parties. The two main parties are doing better.
The last
now
couple of
they
polls
were done in the last 10 years.
The last couple of polls have had Labour about 34%.
Okay, 34%.
Yeah, okay,
still,
a couple,
still
but that's not high. That's not how you find.
Mind you, you could
polling
used to be able to win a majority of 35%, didn't you?
Yeah, there are some big majorities on that sort of polling.
Whoever becomes the largest party is still within the polling margin, the better. So don't like being at.
No, I know. Right, we know polls are a bit sort of like that. And then
No, it's not the polls that are wrong. It's the people who talk about them that are wrong and don't understand fucking statistics. Anyway, we're going to wrap this up.
yes,
Nick, where can they find you on the internet if they want to tempt you to join the Lib Dems?
I am at SarNick on Twitter.
T-S-A-R.
T-S-A-R, King Nick. I'm not actually, just one thing. It's quite funny because if I ever talk about Russian intervention in any elections, people go, yeah, like I'm going to take it from someone who's clearly a bot from Russia called SarNick.
You should probably change your Twitter handle. Jimmy, where can they find you?
At JD Nichols.
And you can find me at Jazza John. Please do check out the website, leave us reviews and stuff. They really genuinely help us. Thank you very much.
The reviews on iTunes, not the website.
No, yeah, sure. Leave reviews wherever you like. I'm not your boss. And also read Jimmy's review of Vice.
Have you seen Vice?
Yeah. No, I haven't. That's but I read. I've read it, and you spoiled it. Although, also,
you spoiled it. It's a historical dramatization.
That's the one with Christian Bale, right?
It is. Yeah.
It
is quite good. It's like The Big Short.
But I want to see it. In
yeah,
a while.
No, it's fantastic. Go, Jimmy. Writes about it in a nice way.
That's almost a compliment.
I did my best. I'm sorry, mate. Okay, we'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.